What's up, Bitcoiners? This episode is presented to you by Ledin.io. If you want to earn interest on your Bitcoin or USDC, or want to use your Bitcoin as collateral, whether it's to avoid a tax transaction, get even quick access to dollars, or double your Bitcoin savings using Ledin's popular B2X loan. Ledin.io is the first digital asset lender with the transparency and security of a formal proof of reserves attestation, raising the bar for transparency in the industry. Ledin, spelled L-E-D-N, is a secure, simple, and easy-to-use platform for managing and growing your digital wealth. I just started to use Ledin this summer, and I've loved using the service, and I believe you will too. I spoke to the team over at Ledin, and they agreed that listeners will get an exclusive offer where you receive $50 free in USDC if you become a Ledin user and take out a Ledin loan using our exclusive link. To learn more, get started, and get your $50 free in USDC, head over to start.ledin.io/Bitcoin Matrix. And now, let's enter the Bitcoin Matrix with Tomer Strohleit. Tomer is on a mission to destroy the lies that are imprisoning people. In this very special chat, Tomer reads four of his pieces throughout the show. We cover and then discuss, rich or poor, Bitcoiners have what money can't buy. Bitcoin is a test. Why everything that should hurt Bitcoin only makes it stronger. And why Bitcoin is the most important thing happening in the world right now. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did, as Tomer really brings the wisdom, beautiful insights, and his calming demeanor in this fantastic rip.
What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Rich or poor, Bitcoiners have what money can't buy. The things money can't buy. Let's talk about the things that money can't buy. Money can't buy honesty. In fact, people who are trying to persuade you to give them your money are often not being entirely truthful with you. Money can't buy friendship. You can't walk into a store or a bar and buy a friend, someone who shares your values, who respects you, who you respect, and for the same reasons it can't buy you love, which is an especially deep form of friendship. Most of all, money can't buy you things that are within yourself. It can't buy you self-esteem, intelligence, courage, or integrity, to list a few. Give an insecure person a pile of money, and they will squander it, either in showing off to others or in self-destructive pursuits. Give money to an intellectually lazy person, and they will not become any smarter. Give a coward money, and he will only have one more thing to be afraid of, losing that money. And give a cheater money, and he will try to use it to hatch some dishonest scheme by which to get more. The things money can buy. Money will buy you a nice outfit, a great haircut, a fancy car, and a beautiful house. But happiness itself will remain out of reach without genuine friends and lovers who you can trust, and without being able to love and respect yourself. Money does not, in fact, buy happiness, not on its own. It's not sufficient. Why do we work so hard for money then? Why do some people measure their worth in dollars? It is true that we do need many of the things that money can buy, like food, shelter, clothing, and even entertainment that makes us a little happier. Money can be an enabler. It can be used to purchase things that satisfy basic survival needs and thereby afford us the time to pursue these other values which money itself cannot buy. However, it is still very mistaken to measure our worth using any single number, let alone a number that we know omits friendship, love, self-esteem, intelligence, courage, integrity, and many other virtues and values we should exhibit and pursue. What's this got to do with Bitcoin? Now let's take a minute to look at the community of Bitcoiners. Bitcoiners believe in a new form of money, Bitcoin. We go to great lengths to explain why we believe it is the best form of money that has ever existed and is ever likely to exist. To be able to do that explaining, we must first go to great lengths to understand what money is and how Bitcoin meets the requirements of being money. To do that, We have to take a very honest look at history and at the present. We must explore what many people take for granted. We must ask hard questions and look for honest, defensible answers. We must learn about the math which Bitcoin relies upon. We need to learn about energy production, which Bitcoin relies upon. We learn about economics, which is the study of how people interact with those things that money can buy. We develop deep conviction informed by all this learning and from our observations and reasoning about what is happening around us. We form views about where the world is headed. We conclude that a world with Bitcoin as its money, or even just as the money used by we who choose Bitcoin, is a better world. We conclude it is a better world because it is honest and transparent. It is a world without secrets, schemes, and deceptions about what money is. It is a world without powerful people who exercise control of the system of money to control the weak. We then find a moral mission in Bitcoin. We take on the responsibility of spreading the knowledge. It requires courage to do this. We must put our money where our mouth is by buying Bitcoin with our dollars. This is an act of risk-taking or courage. It is an act of integrity, aligning our words with our actions. We must remain steadfast. We are laughed at. Powerful people and institutions mock us and try to discredit us. They label us as enablers of criminals and terrorists. We either fortify our courage and conviction or leave Bitcoin. Those of us who stay know that our fellow Bitcoiners who have been or are going through the same tribulations as we did are honest, intelligent, and courageous. We respect each other. We become friends. We each contribute what we can, how we can. We build the world we envision. Do this unwaveringly while millions stand on the sidelines, some watching with curiosity, some mocking us, and some actively attacking and trying to stop us. Occasionally, one runs over and says, "I want to be like you." And we welcome them with becoming a Bitcoiner is a process through which you obtain things money cannot buy. Take a look. Money can't buy honesty. It can't buy friendship. It can't buy self-esteem, courage, intelligence, or integrity either. Yet Bitcoiners, with their ideas, their ideals, their efforts, and their achievements, have acquired all these things. Bitcoiners are honest. They have authentic friendships. They believe in themselves. They are brave. They are smart. And they possess an integrity that puts all of these things ahead of any wealth measured in a monetary value. No Bitcoiner judges another on the basis of how much Bitcoin that other person is worth. It's a faux pas in the community to even inquire about that. I love my fellow Bitcoiners. They are the best people on earth. Some may be financially rich, some not, but they are all worth much more than money to me. Bitcoin has given us all an abundance of the things that money can't buy.
With me tonight is Tomer Strohlite, slayer of lies, who just read that piece, Rich or Poor, Bitcoiners Have What Money Can't Buy. Tomer is a longtime Bitcoiner who has recently started writing prolifically about the insights he has gained over the years. Tomer Strohlite is the host of For the Love of Bitcoin podcast and a popular writer within the space. He believes that the only way to learn is to begin by admitting to yourself, "I don't know." This is also the only way to be free, Tomer says. Tomer strives for and believes in sovereignty, truth, and integrity. Tomer Strohlite, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. Thank you for reading that piece. I found it very poetic. It also made me feel like I was in temple and I was reading sort of a parable or story or sort of, you know, a piece that's read to the community.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think this piece is more read or more spoken to people outside the community, maybe, or you know, maybe it's both. And so I'd love to ask you what maybe inspired you to write this piece?
Yeah. I didn't attend the Bitcoin Miami conference this year, but watching it on the internet and hearing people's testimonials of what went on and seeing the pictures is what was my inspiration. I saw all these Bitcoiners telling me, "Man, I'm so moved by what's going on here. This is so much more. This is about so much more than money. This is just so incredible. I'm seeing all these incredible people. Everybody is committed to the cause." And it occurred to me, you know, I've had a few of these articles that I've written where as soon as I came up with the headline, it kind of, the article kind of wrote itself. I just had to do some rearranging and proofreading and a little bit of trimming here and there. And it really was this. It was, look, you know, there were a lot of friends I have who were at the Miami conference. They don't have a lot of Bitcoin. But they had something that money can't buy, which was what I realized. They have a community. They have friends. They have a civilization that is filled with integrity and will fuel them for the rest of their lives. And I wanted to write something that really spoke to that. And the way that I structured the article was really to say, you know, it's obvious from the reading. It's, there are things that money cannot buy, but look, the fact, the process of becoming a Bitcoiner makes you develop those things that money can't buy. It makes you turn on your brain. You can't just be a Bitcoiner without studying Bitcoin, without studying some element of the math, some element of economics, right? 100% of Bitcoiners who are truly Bitcoiners, not just people who've invested and plan to sell Bitcoin, but who are Bitcoiners, have a view about the evils of fiat money. There's a moral judgment there, and it's backed by reason. And so all of these things start to build a character in a person. And so I think whether you end up buying a lot of Bitcoin or getting a lot of Bitcoin or whether you don't, the process of becoming a Bitcoin gives you self-esteem, integrity, trustworthiness. Like, you become a trustworthy person. And that means other people can be your friends, and other people like you, you can be their friends. And so it's really kind of a very remarkable phenomenon. And I think when we look at the friendships that are formed in the Bitcoin community, it's because of the process of becoming a Bitcoiner. It's not that all these already great people who already knew economics, who already were cryptographers, who already had interest in all these things, suddenly came together where they were just waiting for Bitcoin. No, Bitcoin changed us. And it showed us a way that we bought into every step of the way, right? If you disagree with anything in Bitcoin, then it's not for you. But we've all agreed that this thing is beautiful because we've taken a look at it, and it's just, and it's legitimate, and it's moral. And so we've got a lot of conviction in what we do, and we're on the same team, and we're fighting for the same thing. So yeah, that's where it really comes from. And it is interesting that you point out, you say it's like something that's read in temple or that's read to a congregation. Like, yeah, we are, we've congregated in cyberspace to have these shared values around the things that Bitcoin stands for and creates and protects.
Yeah. Well, we definitely congregate in cyberspace and some of us in real life. Mm-hmm. And you've been in Bitcoin a long time. And I'm kind of curious whether you have more trust and faith in humanity since you've been in Bitcoin. And what I mean by that is not so much whether you yourself are able to give more trust and faith, but have you found more people, more because of Bitcoin? Do you find that you trust and you trust Bitcoiners more quickly? And trust might not be the right word.
You said like have faith in, right? Like, you know, there's this notion of like, do you have faith in humanity? Do you believe that humanity is good and that humanity will succeed and thrive? And I've been in Bitcoin since mid 2013 or so. And the short answer to your question is yes, I do. And I think Bitcoin actually plays a part in it because mankind isn't determined to succeed or fail. We have free will. We can think hard and figure out what's right and what's wrong, and then we can choose whether we want to do what's right or what's wrong. And we each individually choose. And, you know, there are great moments in our history and there are dark moments in our history. And there are great people in our history and there are terrible people in our history. One of the things that I think is so special about Bitcoin is it starts to create incentives for people to cooperate and incredibly strong disincentives, like the most extreme disincentives that you could have for people to cheat. Because if you try to cheat in Bitcoin, all you do is waste your energy, right? Like, try to mine a block with a double spend transaction. All you've done is wasted all your energy. Try to broadcast a fake transaction. All you've done is wasted your energy. You can't cheat. It's a system that can't be cheated. And so that's kind of really wonderful. But when you remove the incentives to cheat, all those people who might have been tempted by the incentive to cheat, to become cheaters, do something else with their life, something honest. And so I think that's kind of this wonderful thing that as it takes over, it'll crowd out all these people and all these choices that people make in these very compromised system where even if you're not a bad person, you sometimes have to tell a lie. You sometimes have to take advantage of somebody who's unsuspecting. You sometimes have to do things that don't feel right and that you know that there's something wrong about what you're doing, but it's the profit maximizing way. And sometimes these things are really, really bad. Like, if you're the CEO of a pharmaceutical company and you on the one hand have a cheap and effective drug that will cure the disease, on the other hand you have an expensive and ineffective treatment that will require a lifetime, I think we've seen too many cases where the former is suppressed and the latter is what's marketed because it's the profit maximizing thing, and it's clearly the immoral choice in these cases. So I don't want to necessarily specify anything, but those are incentives that encourage immoral behavior. Bitcoin has only incentives that encourage cooperation and moral behavior. So it's definitely increased my faith in humanity. And I, you know, as I talk to Bitcoiners who've had a similar transformation, they're very aware of what's wrong in the world and they want to work to fix it, right? They're more than just social warriors on social media who share posts and they want to get out there and fix the world, right? It, you know, we say Bitcoin fixes this or fix the money, fix the world, but it's people fix the world with money that works, right? So we need Bitcoin, but Bitcoin needs us, right? Or the world needs us to, it's not going to do it all by itself, right? And already we start, you know, like becoming a Bitcoiner, as in the article, it usually means running a node. It means buying Bitcoin. It means taking action, right? You're not, like I can declare to be a Republican or a Democrat. And what does that mean? It just means, maybe it means I vote. It doesn't even mean I vote. It's just something I can declare on Facebook, right? Or I can claim to be an environmentalist. And look at how many environmentalists, right? Especially the big people in the movement, fly in private jets and have mansions and yachts, but claim to be environmentalists. So they lack integrity. Their actions don't line up with their words. That's not the case in Bitcoin. Like, there's very few people who say, I'm all for Bitcoin and then don't buy Bitcoin and don't support Bitcoin and don't take the actions that align with what Bitcoin says. So it does give me faith in humanity. And I think, you know, in 100 years, most people in the world won't bother to call themselves Bitcoiners because it'll be taken for granted, or maybe they will. Maybe, you know, it's hard to say, but today it really is. It's a badge that you put on yourself that says, I've been through a process to become a Bitcoiner and I'm proud of it. And it means something important to me.
Yeah, I definitely don't think in the future people will refer to themselves as Bitcoiners the way Americans don't still refer to themselves as revolutionaries in regards to, say, George Washington and that war. That was a big part of our identity until a certain period of time, it just becomes like fish and water. And so I think by second or third generation of being on a Bitcoin standard, that would just be kind of identifying as well-to-do or maybe wealthy, not so much about what your grandfather did. Maybe it will, because it'll delineate who came from sort of that one-time Cantillon effect that we're going through now, where we're sort of blessed to be in this time and place and primed to get into Bitcoin early. So I'm not sure yet. I'm not sure what your thoughts on that are.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I do sometimes say, I hope we don't ever get to a stage where you don't have to choose Bitcoin, where it has so succeeded that it's the de facto standard for 100% of the people in the world when you're raised and you don't ask, what is money? Why do we use Bitcoin? Like, you know, because then we're set up for all the reasons to fail and the fight for Bitcoin will have to happen all over again if the people who run Bitcoin are careless about it, right? Like, Bitcoin actually is only decentralized because we each fight for its decentralization. That's what the block size wars were fought over. And it was, and it showed that a community can defeat a small but powerful group, but they have to fight and they have to stand for what they believe in. And that will continue to be true throughout Bitcoin's history. So it's invulnerable if we choose to protect it, and it's vulnerable if we don't. But that's the subject of another article we're going to read in about half an hour. So
I think that I hope that the incentives are so sustainable that people don't have to think about why hard money is good. They just live in a hard money system. Yeah. in the distant future. I'm kind of curious when Bitcoin started to teach you about things money can't buy. I mean, most people, you know, get in for the gains, they stay for the money. A lot of people speculate on it or whatever. When did Bitcoin started connecting with you about things that money can't buy?
That's a really great question. To some degree from the very beginning, but to an increasing degree over time. So it was kind of this gradual growth of all this stuff. So I think that to some degree from the very beginning, there were some parts. Like I was at first fascinated by, well, can this thing be money, and how much money might it be worth, and trying to study, well, what's the math behind it and how does it work? But it wasn't long after that I started to tie it into philosophy and the morality of philosophy, because here it was money that can't cheat. And like the second you use the word cheat, you've entered into the realm of morality and the realm of integrity. And it took me a long time to put these things together, right? Like I've been in the rabbit hole and falling deeper and deeper for years and years and years. And I think there were all these things all over the place. Like the reason I loved Bitcoin was because it was this truth machine. It was this incorruptibility machine, and it was incorruptibility on something that's so often corrupted, which is the dealings with money. And again, it immediately takes it up from this is about getting rich to this is about integrity and incorruptibility. And all of these ideas just kind of, I marinated in these ideas for years, and they eventually started to come together until it was like only in February of this year that I decided I was really going to start writing. And I think it was only in March that I started writing. And so it's been like 6 or 7 months, but I've been writing, I was like constipated or pregnant with 8 years of ideas that just started to come out. And so it's all sort of coming out right now.
Yeah. The analogy I think of there is, I've heard before, you know, a boxer will never fight as good as before his first heavyweight, you know, his first title. Mm-hmm. You're putting everything into it. And, right. Or like a rapper will have his best album, his first album, because it's like, maybe he's 25 years old and has 25 years of experience. And then when you come out of the second one, you maybe only have 6 months or a year to then digest what's happened and come up with new material. The reason I asked that is, you know, you did write about how, you know, give an insecure person a pile of money and they will squander it either in showing off to others or in self-destructive pursuits. Give a coward money and he will only have one more thing to be afraid of, losing that money. And I think that really just speaks to one's relationship with money. Yeah. And I think in a lot of ways that drives how you either retain or save money, the risks you take. And you ask another question, I want to ask this directly to you, is why do we work so hard for money? And why do some people measure their worth in dollars or even Bitcoin?
Mm-hmm. I think because we've been, in many senses, I think it's only a factor of this fiat world we live in, that we work so hard for money in a time when you don't need to work so hard for money, because you can have a very acceptable living. You can live better than a pharaoh lived or a king lived off of near minimum wage. I mean, you can afford Netflix, which is more entertainment, delivered into your house than any king could have ever commanded be brought before them of a higher quality. You've certainly aren't going to suffer from a lack of access to food and calories. You have climate controlled environment. You may or may not have air conditioning, but you certainly have heating if you need it. You have a roof over your head, four walls around you. So like we live in a time where we take it for granted, but you know, people used to die young because they didn't have any of these things and die from diseases, which we don't die from at all anymore. So we have this really great life, but we are lustful for the lifestyle of the rich and famous. I always view, there was a TV show in the 80s that came on that was called Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Some people are too young to remember it. And I've kind of viewed that as this turning point in the fiat era, that it had been around, fiat had been around long enough and people were starting to get so extravagant with their lifestyles and it was starting to get on television and the whole thing kind of ran ahead of itself and we started to see what people who live in Beverly Hills live like, and it was preposterous. But it lured us, right? It tempted us to say, oh, maybe I want a Rolls Royce. Maybe I want a mansion. Maybe I want some fancy painting. Maybe I want some fancy chandelier, so on and so on. And a Lamborghini, right? That's the Lambo's meme. And so I do think some people have lost sight of what's valuable to them, and they work so hard for the money that they forget what it was that they were after in the first place. And I've got lots of stories of people I know and of myself who've been lured at times into pursuing money without really realizing that the things you were trying to get with that money weren't providing any satisfaction or happiness, just more responsibility and more accountability and more frustration and more things to actually be disappointed and angry about. So I think we need to be careful. Like, we do need to work for money to take care of the basic needs that we have and of the things that we really truly are passionate about achieving. Like, you know, if your mission really is to go to Mars, you do need to work hard for a lot of money, and not just money, but the developing the know-how to get to Mars. But if you just want to live a ordinary human, and not ordinary because it's extraordinary to be alive, but a normal human life where you fall in love with somebody, have kids if you want, raise them lovingly, have friends, hang out in a backyard, have a barbecue, like these normal things, which are very satisfying. You need to know where to stop chasing the money and start enjoying it to do these things. The second question you asked is, like, why do some people measure themselves? And I mean, like, I never in my life asked the question, what is X and X's net worth, until the internet came around or until the media started reporting. So-and-so is the richest man in the world. He's worth $33 billion, right? It's Bill Gates just overtook Warren Buffett and they're worth this much. And then so people started searching, you know, and if you type any famous person's name into Google, it auto-completes with what are they worth, right? And that's not Google pushing it on you, right? That's what people are asking now. So people have it in their heads, this whole keeping up with the Joneses or sticking your nose into other people's business of what they're worth, it's really unsavory. Who cares, right? Like, it doesn't matter what somebody else is worth in dollars. I bet you that someone who's worth the median worth in dollars is a much happier person than the richest person on earth. And you know, I bet you bitcoins to dollars that's true. If there was a way to prove it, like, there's just so much stress that comes with being the richest person on earth or one of the richest people on earth. I sometimes wonder, like, have these people lost sight themselves of what they might have ever wanted to do with their life? Like, at this point, do give it away, right? Stop trying to engineer the world with all your wealth, or use it as a source of fame to tell everybody else what to do. Because aspiring to be one of the richest people in the world is not a particularly noble aspiration. It's very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's very superficial, right? You haven't won, right? You don't have any of the things that money can't buy. You have way more money than you need. So what have you really accomplished? You've put too much effort into one thing in life and probably done so at the expense of other things in life. You know, all the richest men in the world now are divorced, which isn't to say that, you know, marriages don't work out, but Elon's on his third or fourth. Bill got divorced. Jeff got divorced.
Bill got divorced.
Yeah. So it's It doesn't guarantee happiness. I don't mean to try to use that as the one metric of happiness, but these people don't look happy to me.
Yeah. I am old enough to remember Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous with Robin Leach.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and I do remember the 80s and Wall Street and Greed is Good. And that's kind of a twisted thing, because I think in some ways greed is good with something like Bitcoin and the incentives it drives. And
you know, those were really important cultural moments in the fiat era. Like I pause and I say, are you joking, Tomer? Like Lifestyles of Rich and Famous, that piece of garbage, first, like one of the first reality TV shows. Like what's a really cheap show to produce? Take a camera into a celebrity's house, right? And walk around and show their car. You don't have to write a script. Nope. You have one.
And they have
guy
a movie coming out. And
yeah. So they're like paying you to be, the whole thing's an ad.
Yep.
Very important cultural moment, because it thrust the celebrity lifestyle onto the screen, right? The celebrities were no longer acting in roles and being artists. They were being rich and famous, right? That was the show. Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. And so everybody wanted to be rich and famous, and they sold their souls to do it.
Yeah. You know, the sell your souls part, I think, is very important there. But I see this as, like, in my lifetime, I've seen two sides of the spectrum here. Is one, maybe you think of the urbanite and the young professional who is trying to rule the world and become the billionaire. And maybe someone else who's outside the city and is living a little bit more of a paycheck to paycheck subsistence. And in a lot of regards, I see the person living paycheck to paycheck, if they like what they're doing enough to make it so it's not hell, but they like what they're doing. And they're living less like an animal. And I recognize that. But I still buttress that up with, that person in a fiat world, in a Red Queen's race, has so much more uncertainty about future liabilities and expenses. And sure. I think that's, you know, for certain mindset. And on the other end of the spectrum, the things you have to do to become a billionaire or a multi-billionaire or Jeff Bezos. And I agree with you 100%. And Clancy Rogers really pointed this out to me on Twitter, but like, money doesn't buy prosperity or love or the things money can't buy. It does help, but one thing it does buy, and this could be for good or for bad, but it buys generations of time for your heirs and multi-generations ahead of you. And I imagine, you know, there's one part of me that, especially when I was younger, I was like, all right, well, Bezos's kids, maybe they waste this time, but they're taking, you know, maybe 1-2 phone calls a month to settle the family affairs and then go skiing for a month and then go to the Hamptons for a month. And I don't think that's a horrible life if you don't let it get.
It's not a great life. If you see the lives of children of the,
it's generally bad. It's pretty bad. But you're buying opportunity for that.
Well, so but you may be, you know what, you may be better off. Like, again, there's no guarantee that it's better off to have money. Like
I agree.
You die of a different thing, right? If you if you're in poverty, you might die of hunger. If you're in tremendous prosperity, you might die crashing your Lamborghini while you're high,
or a drug overdose.
So it doesn't clean these things up. It doesn't fix your character. It doesn't give you a purpose in life to be given a lot of money. And again, this is something that we miss. And the comeback you or someone else would come back with is, but it gives you the luxury of being able to pursue your purpose in life more easily, because, you know, if you have all this money, you might have all this capacity. Well, it is a knife that cuts both ways, but it brings around to me this idea of this thing called Bitcoin, which is the reason that for the person working the middle class job or trying to get a middle class job and work it and earn enough to live a decent life and be able to retire at a reasonable age and to take a reasonable vacation, you know, not on a private jet to some Pacific Island, but, you know, just to go to Florida or someplace nice and take their kids to Disney World once or twice while they're still kids. Like, these kinds of things are totally possible when we don't have the fiat money standard and we have a Bitcoin standard instead. And people get paid with money that's reliable and doesn't dissolve in their hands like sugar, where they try to save it and they're required to invest it, which is really to gamble it with some advisor who really is just a salesperson. Like, our system is broken, and it causes what we think are some kind of injustices that make us think they'll be fixed if we have lots of money, and we're really trading one set of problems for another when we have a lot of money, because our money is a lie. And so you either have not enough of the lie or too many lies, and then you become desperate to protect it, right? The man without courage who's afraid of losing his money that I spoke of in the article. It's a big responsibility to be handed a lot of money, and many second and third generation wealthy people have lost all their money for that reason. There's not enough structure around them. There's a saying that goes from shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations, which is meant like, you barely had a shirt on your back, you made a ton of money, and then and your grandkid is back to just the shirt on their back because they blew it.
I see what you're saying there. And I think on the other end of the spectrum, what I wrestle with is, for everyone on that spectrum, we are living like kings in this era. We're healthier than ever before. We're safer than ever before. We have the opportunity to be more nutritious than ever before. I don't know if we're there yet. Maybe not less stressed than ever before. But you talked about like Netflix, piped into your house, so all the entertainment you could ever want. If you are middle class, maybe you have a McMansion. You got one or two cars. You're going on that nice vacation. And I wonder how much of that is us being lulled into, just a life of consumption versus paradise, via the fiat matrix there, and what inflation does with money, and whether we'll all have jobs at the end of sort of hyperinflation. And yet we might still have Netflix in the house, but maybe only, the amount of hours the government allows or something.
It is interesting. I mean, I think that there is an experience of being human, and it involves using your legs and getting up and walking, and it involves using your head and getting up and thinking and moving your body, so sitting there is kind of this passive receptor of empty calories and empty information is not really a good human existence. It's like the lion in the cage in the zoo, right? There is a thing called a lion which lives on the plains and hunts animals, and that's its existence. And then there's one of these specimens taken that doesn't live as a lion anymore, and so it's still genetically a lion, but it's not a lion. It's not living the life of a lion. And this is what's true about human beings, right? Like we're meant to live. We're meant to fall in love. We're meant to be, have our hearts broken. We're meant to have all these experiences, to make friends and to sometimes lose those friends, and to learn what it means, the consequences of telling a lie, so that you learn not to tell it again in the future. We need to live. And that's all I'll really say about that now, because I know you wanted to get around to a few other articles, and we're going down all these other rabbit holes.
I love the tangents tonight. I love taking our time, and we'll get to what we do. Right. I'm really curious what if you could explain, like, why do we go to such great lengths to explain, that we believe in Bitcoin? It takes a tremendous amount of courage, because we do get mocked, and you've been around longer than we take risks. We get mocked. Yeah. It takes an incredible amount of patience to be proven right. Especially in terms of relevancy bias or recency bias, where you might have told someone, you being anyone, about Bitcoin five times, they might never have heard you. And then whenever the price they did hear you, that's where they hold you accountable to Bitcoin's success and whether you're right or not. Why do we go to such great lengths to evangelize?
For me, it's because I want to know what the truth is. And I found something that's truthful, and I want to know what's right is, like what's moral. And I found something that's right and moral. And so I can't stop talking about it, and this is why do we all fall down the rabbit hole? It's because we're doing exactly what the motto is: trust, don't trust, verify. We are verifying. We're going deeper and deeper and deeper into this situation to say, how exactly does this thing work? What's a secure hash algorithm? How do you chain them together in hash pointers? What is Austrian economics? What is Keynesian economics? Oh my God, what is the central bank? What is the Federal Reserve? What happened in 1971? Like, we are asking ourselves these questions and trying to fill them with facts and trying to integrate them in our minds to have an accurate, cohesive, actionable view of reality. And that's why we go through all of this, because we are not passive. We are active human beings. And so this is exactly the point I just spoke to, right? Part of being a human being is using your mind to verify truths and to arrive at truths, to ask questions. Like, that's the history of humanity, is curious people asking questions, conducting experiments, learning things, doing things with that learning. And the cycle repeats on and on and on and on. Right? It's philosophy and science. And so Bitcoiners are philosophers and scientists. And it's part of a really proud tradition that goes back to the ancient times. And so we're just continuing rationality. That's why we do it, because it's what makes us human. It's what is the part of humans that's the good part, right? It's the part that, when you look at the parts of, at the eras in history that were the best eras to be alive in, these were the eras where reason ruled the day. They were ancient Greece. They were the Enlightenment, the Renaissance. They were these times that are known for the age of reason, right? Like, they were known for the use of reason and the use of philosophy and the development of science. And this is, you know, in the fiat era, took us off of that standard. It made arbitrary decree as opposed to valid facts, true scarcity, true economics, true supply and demand, what drove our civilization. So now we have all this ridiculousness in the media and in medicine and in education, where lies are positioned and, you know, narratives are tried to be built. Narrative being, you know, some substitute word for myth, right? Like, a narrative is what kind of lie somebody is trying to tell us, what kind of myth somebody is trying to create. And that's awful. And civilizations collapse when they lose sight of reality, lose the plot of reality. And so our civilization has been collapsing slowly, first since 1971, but very rapidly recently. And Bitcoin is something that will reverse the direction, right? And put it back in the right direction, the direction of reason and rationality and goodness.
Yeah. I do think we're seeing the controlled demolition of democracy right now. And I think it's actually been sped up by Bitcoin's existence or its birth. One of the things I really love about this article, though, what really struck to me is the final sentence: Bitcoin has given us all an abundance of the things that money can't buy. And we've outlined those things, but I can't agree more. And it's so true. And I felt that from my first little stack of Satoshis and, you know, getting off of their ledger and, yeah, and having something that can't be debased.
Yeah.
And what it really speaks to, though, is it was just that BitBlock boom, and Parker Lewis was doing a presentation on how to, you know, teach Bitcoin in one lesson. And one of the things he was going over there was like anchor, and really anchor on the 21 million maybe, and then digital scarcity. And when you think about technology, we've never had digital scarcity before, but technology always brings us an abundance of things that are scarce. And I haven't felt that so much since Bitcoin, an abundance of things that are scarce. I mean, I had love before Bitcoin in my life and amazing things in my life and family and friends, but I feel I'm, you know, the expression stop and smell the roses. I'm more connected to those things. I can sense those things more because I'm less on the hamster wheel of just trying to keep up with inflation, right, and putting all my thoughts, even when I'm not working, into how do I protect my what little money I have and make sure it doesn't get debased. And I don't know if I ever really even thought about it in those terms, but you just instinctually, it's like either I'm going to use this money to buy something to consume, or I'm going to invest it because there is no savings in the current model. And I'd love to turn now to another one of your fantastic articles, Bitcoin is a Test, because a lot of the questions that I have now are just relevant to that and building on what we just discussed. So if we could jump into that.
This is a short one. I'll say something about it after I read it.
I'm so excited to let you know that we've added another sponsor here on the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. Over the next several months, I'll be sharing with you all sorts of information about the Bitcoin 2022 conference, which celebrates Bitcoin over 4 days, April 6th through 9th, 2022, with four different passes. The 4 days include Industry Day, 2 days of main events and speakers, and lastly, a festival day which is a day of music and networking. Prices will continue to rise over the next few months, so get in early and use my affiliate code for 10% off. That affiliate code is Cedric2022. The affiliate link is TIXR.com/PR/Cedric2022/26217. I'll put this all in the show notes for you to use and get 10% off your tickets to Bitcoin 2022. I went last year with my wife and it was so dope. We really had an unreal time, so much fun. And from what I'm hearing from the team is that next year will be way bigger and better. And those guys over at Bitcoin Magazine always, I mean always, come through. I can't wait to see you there. We'll grab a beer. And now, back to the show with Tomer Strohlite, the Slayer of Lies.
Bitcoin is a test. Bitcoin tests you. Bitcoin tests your curiosity. Bitcoin tests your intelligence. Bitcoin tests your patience. It tests your character. It tests your honesty. It tests your integrity. It tests your courage. It tests your willingness to take risks. It tests your care in avoiding unnecessary dangers. It tests your ability to distinguish the truth from a lie. It tests your conviction. It tests your skills. It tests your creativity. It tests your independence. It tests your relationships. It tests your priorities. It tests your mind. It tests your body. It tests your soul. Bitcoin shows you the results of these tests. Sometimes it rewards you, other times it may punish you. Yet within each test, Bitcoin always teaches you a lesson. That lesson is another test, a test to see what you will learn from that lesson. Thus, Bitcoin is a teacher. It teaches you about you. It teaches you to reshape and improve yourself. It does this through its tests and lessons. It lets you see the results. Thus, Bitcoin is also a mirror. The more you look into this mirror, the more it can show you about you. Observe how these tests and lessons change you. You grow and you can see your growth. You see growth in your curiosity, your intelligence, your patience, your character, your honesty, your integrity, and your courage. You learn to take ever-increasing yet calculated risks. You get better at distinguishing truth from lies. You see your conviction growing. You develop new skills and you apply them. You express your creativity and you bravely put it on display. You see your independence rise and you shed your dependency on others. You see previously unseen details in your relationships, relationships with other people, with organizations, and with nature itself. You make changes in these relationships for the better. You see the things that you have prioritized in your past. You reevaluate your priorities. You establish new ones. You activate and focus your mind more. You emerge from a slumber. You take better care of your body. You emerge from being sedentary. Maybe you even discover the true nature of your soul. Bitcoin changes you, but only if you let it. Bitcoin takes you on a journey of education, a journey filled with tests. This educational journey takes place not in a classroom, but in reality itself. It leads to a transformation. It results in you looking in the mirror and liking what you see, in loving who you are. Each time you look in this mirror, after passing yet another test, you may love what you see even more. This is what it means to be a successful human being, to honestly and rationally know what you want, to act virtuously to make your desires real, to know it was you who did it. Make the most of this life. Take the test.
Wow. Yeah. Another great piece. I'd love to go through it quite a bit. And I'd love to start with, and when I say, you know, how is Bitcoin testing you now? I would substitute the word, I think Bitcoin and world are synonymous. It's just reality, it's truth. So how do you think the world is testing you now?
Well, the world just keeps getting more and more serious, right? We're in a very, very complicated situation, which has some of the most terrifying political circumstances we've, we went through wars and 9/11, which were horrifying moments. And we kind of realized maybe, maybe we bought into a narrative that was not exactly 100% the truth in some of these things. We don't know exactly what went on. And we can look around and we know whatever we're being fed right now is not pure truth. Right? Like there's nonsense left, right, and center. The whole world is in hysteria over the climate and over the COVID and over whether we should wear masks and how many injections of which vaccines we should or shouldn't take. The world is just split apart, and it really requires objectivity, neutrality, intellectual integrity, not leaping to conclusions. There's people on every side of every issue who may be wrong, who may be lying, who may be manipulated. You want to understand what their incentives are, but you know that maybe their incentives aren't, maybe they're acting with integrity despite some bad incentives. So it's a real test right now to figure out where to go. And I think this is kind of where the pride for a lot of Bitcoiners comes from, because they have a lot of conviction that they're on the right path. Some maybe overconfidently are certain that they're on the one and only right and true path. Some a little more humble. There is an expression about staying humble in the Bitcoin community. And it is important that we remain engaged. But the world is testing in all kinds of different ways. Like every family that I know of just about has people within it who are in disagreement over some of these fundamental issues that are going on. Test your ability to be understanding. I mean, the world right now is very much testing our ability to be accepting of disagreements between us and the ones we love and who are really, really important to us. And it is it important that you're right, or which is more important, that you're right or that you continue to get along with the people that you love? That doesn't mean necessarily compromise some value that's really fundamental to you, but at least be prepared to accept that different people have different conclusions about the situation that's going on around them. And they may be wrong and you may be right. Stop loving them as a result of this, or can you accept that they're going to have different opinions and different conclusions, and may not be as smart as you, or may not be as curious as you, or may not be taking the same tests as you in the same order as you. So that's a test as well. I think when I wrote this article, there's two things I really want to say about this article. One is, I always share these articles with a broad group of people, and usually people don't necessarily comment who aren't Bitcoiners on some of these articles, but often they do, and they say, oh, that was a good piece of writing. That this one was one where I got two very different reactions. Bitcoiners were like, Tomer, this is the best article you've ever written. I totally agree with it. It was just the most amazing thing. And people who weren't Bitcoiners said, Tomer, I'm completely mystified by what the hell you're talking about in this article. How does Bitcoin test your curiosity? How does it test your patience? How does it test your intelligence? Like to them, Bitcoin is this thing that you buy, like this inert thing. Like it's like saying a bottle of Evian water tests your curiosity. A bottle of Evian water tests your intelligence. No, it doesn't. It's just an inert thing that you buy. So there's something going on here that's really different. So that's the first thing I want to say about this article. Like it's my test for how I know if someone's a Bitcoiner is if they read it and they say, wow, that was a great article. I totally agree. Bitcoin has tested me in all these things. And if someone reads the article and says, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, I'm like, okay, you're not a Bitcoiner yet. The other thing was I realized that just about every event in life is a test. And you can get frustrated by it, or you can get angry about it, or you can proclaim victory about it, or you can look at it as, what can I learn from this? And when you look at everything as what is this testing about me? What am I trying? And you know what you're trying to improve about yourself, which is usually more than one thing if you have any self-awareness, you can start to connect and say, this is a moment where I need to practice patience, practice acceptance, practice emotional control, practice taking a problem away and thinking harder about it. Whatever it is that your challenges are, you know, everyone's got their own. Practice not getting triggered by something, not letting something cause anxiety in me. There's so many different things, right? And everything, if you start really looking at life as this set of benevolent tests, right? Like not a test that if you behave in the normal way, then you learn, you still behaved in the normal way. But if you now can say, well, how can I do better this time or next time from what I learned from this test, it really is remarkable. So in that sense, you know, Bitcoin's no different than everything else in life. But it is, because it is such a test. You know, it's so revolutionary. You have to learn how to do everything in it. There's so many shady characters all around in the crypto space and in the banking space. And there's so many people who don't understand it and people scoff at it and mock it. So you have to really, you know, like one of the tests is, am I going to get intimidated by somebody laughing at me? Or am I going to have conviction to pursue the truth regardless? And that's a test that all Bitcoiners face. Am I going to be tricked into buying something that masquerades as something than Bitcoin, or pretends to be better than something that is Bitcoin? Like, you have to answer. That's not an obvious answer, right? Like, I, you know, for you and me, I bet we probably both agree that all these other projects are shit. But it's not, you know, for me, that's not because I've decided that it's shit without studying it. I understand what Bitcoin is really, really well, and I've looked at these other things, and I can see exactly where the traps are and what mistakes they made, or also what deceptions they participated in and they crafted. But that's very hard for a lot of people to do, because you have to, I know what I need to know in order to know this. It's a lot. Like, I had to learn a lot. I had to learn cryptography and economics and mining and like all this other stuff to know that just this one little part of this one other coin is a scam. So it's very hard. And that's why I say this thing is a test. Life is a test. I mean, this has always been the case, right? If you, especially in harsher times when there were fewer laws and it was more of a Wild West, or, and I think of the opening scene of the movie Aladdin, whether it's the animated or the feature-length film, and Aladdin's running through the markets and everything's chaotic and he's stealing and you could get your hands cut off. And this was life, right? People ripped other people off. People killed each other. You had to survive. And you had to use your wits to live in the streets, and it wasn't this simple life. And so people got tested a lot in life. They built a lot more character than maybe we have. It's interesting to see that Bitcoin is this accelerator of building character and testing you. And that's really what Bitcoin is like. It's an intensifier of you being tested in life and learning. And we're learning hyper quickly as Bitcoiners.
Yeah. I'd love to hear, you know, you mentioned compromised values, and we're talking about Bitcoin as a test, and we mentioned Bitcoin 2021 before. I'm assuming you wanted to be there, and that it wasn't of the notion of like, hey, I'd rather just stack the sats, which I think is honorable and makes a lot of sense if that's the approach. Was that a test, not being able to go where you wanted to go?
Yeah, you know, it was this choice. Like, the reason I couldn't go was I had to be here to take care of my daughter who wasn't well, and my wife who had a condition where she couldn't take care of her. So it wasn't a very hard test. Mm. The test was, would I resent them for it, right? It's not their fault that they're sick, but I couldn't do the thing that I wanted to. So I could have had a chip on my shoulder over that, but it's not their fault, right? So like this was really the test. I really wanted to go, and I have obligations to the people I love. I mean, we were just talking about this exact same thing, and they are my priority. And as much as I would love to hang out with all the great Bitcoiners and to have been there to watch Jack Mallers deliver that live speech that everybody said they cried at when Bukele came on and announced that there was going to be a law to make Bitcoin legal tender, I wouldn't trade being there for having betrayed the care that I owe my family. So a test, and again, not the test in the choice, but the test in how I perceived it, right? Like, it would have been very easy for someone making that choice to resent having a family, because they're an obligation rather than a blessing in a circumstance like that. But they're a blessing. And I'm very blessed, and I love them very, very, very much. And I wouldn't give them up for anything, including getting to go to Bitcoin conferences all year long. So it's, but a moment like that makes you reflect on that.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, Bitcoin is transformative. It is a journey. The other thing I love that you wrote about in the article, is it lets you see the results, proof of work. It makes me think about truth and. Mm-hmm. And also really dwell on a lot lately how I think, you know, people who hate the truth or liars just hate Bitcoin. And I sometimes see a trend there with people who aren't really friendly to the truth.
You bet.
don't love Bitcoin.
They loathe it. It calls them out, right? It is this mirror of truth, and they look into it, and what they see horrifies them.
Yeah, right? And it even happens to people who don't understand Bitcoin. They just intuitively, if they don't like the truth, I notice. Yeah, I mean to cut you off, but I'd love to get into a tweet thread truth bomb that you dropped today.
Okay.
This one's 13 tweets.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I don't have it in front of me then. So
I'm going to read this one.
Okay, good.
A thread on everything. Bitcoiners are interested in reintroducing integrity to many industries. We are not alone. Of course, finance is one such industry. We want to end the debt cycle, inflation, currency debasement, and financialization of key industries. We want to end financial scams. We want to end the requirements to speculate on complex instruments just to try to save money. Integrity in money will end the disintegration of our economy. But that's not all. We want to participate in restoring integrity in agriculture, education, medicine, media, and more. Agriculture has become unsustainable by working against nature. Regenerative farming fixes this. It restores the soil, the nutrients in our food, the balance between plants and livestock. It removes carbon from the atmosphere and puts in the soil and food. What else? Education has become indoctrination. Instead of teaching each child how to think based on their individual needs and strengths, it treats every child like an input into an assembly line. It labels that don't fit its process as having disorders. Homeschooling, Montessori, and personalized education, like in the good old schoolhouses of yore, fixes this. The internet can also replace outrageously expensive and ineffective education with free lifelong learning. What else? Medicine has become about maintaining conditions instead of curing them. The financial incentive for pharma companies to see you on lifelong prescriptions instead of taking a cure is off the charts. Taking personal responsibility for our health and pursuing cures fixes this. Psychedelics play a role in the mental health epidemic. Returning to the roots of when we were physically healthier does too, like eating nutrient-rich food. What else? Media has become about spreading fear and lies instead of exposing problems. Media's incentive is to have you glued to the screen 24/7 out of fear rather than quickly informing you and then letting you go about your life. Algorithms try to addict you to digital media and distract you from actual truth. It doesn't help that your education was indoctrination, that your food is low in nutrients, that you're popping pills and supplements, and that you're deep in debt. Best fix I can see for media is that Bitcoin fixes this too by drawing you away from this poisoned mainstream media and into consuming media from a cleaner stream. But stay away from crypto because that is just as toxic. What else? What else am I missing or wrong about? What other industries are disintegrating because of a lack of integrity of the people in them? What terrible incentives have been introduced to make them this way? What can we do to fix them? We need to fix our civilization. Thank you for coming to Tomer's TED Talk. This was, a whole shitload of, I see it like a battle cry or a cry for help, a wake-up call. And I think that you're still trying to get through to people who might not be passing all the tests is kind of how I took that. What was your motivation for writing this and what other things have come up since you wrote it that you've been doing wrong?
I've been having a lot of conversations with a lot of Bitcoiners about a lot of things. And I wanted to put them all together into one idea that I would share on Twitter, because on Twitter I'm not asking you to read a whole article. And so like a 13 tweet thread is more than asking you to read a tweet, but it's getting people engaged in asking questions. And I think there's very many Bitcoiners who, although they've now passed the first test of, it's not just about number go up, it's not just about getting rich, it's about fixing the money. It's like, okay, well, when we fix the money, what else are we actually trying to fix? What else is actually broken? And I just wanted to focus, I didn't want to focus on every single thing. The roads are broken either. you know, there's potholes in the road. Like there's so many things that are broken. But these really big things that obviously the, like, what is it about money that's broken that we're trying to fix? And so the first couple of tweets in there were about things that most Bitcoiners are already educated about and could agree on. But then I wanted to say, okay, well, let's talk about other things. Did you know that agriculture is broken? Some do. There's a very, there's a Bitcoiner who goes by the name Untapped Growth. You may have had him, you should have him on your show. And and he's all about regenerative farming. And if you start to go down that rabbit hole and you realize, you know, we've really, our food grows on the soil, our livestock grazes on plants that grow on the soil. And the agriculture of the last 50 to 70 years has been very chemical intensive, very plowing the land, disturbing the soil, destroying the soil, destroying the things that live within the soil, putting toxins onto, you know, herbicides and pesticides and fungicides. And we've killed the soil. And you can take a look at what healthy soil is, which is really wet and moist and crumbly and filled with worms. And you can look at what's become of most of the soil, which is clay and brick, brick-like almost, and dry. It doesn't absorb water well, and plants don't grow in it well, so we have to put all these nutrients on the surface so that the plants can grow. Like, it's not a sustainable way of farming. And it turns out, without putting all this cost into it, without putting all these chemicals into it, you can actually regenerate the soil. That's why it's called regenerative farming. And crops grow really well on there. And it's not that we have a lack of food, right? Like, we already grow. There's 7 billion people on the earth. We grow enough food for over 10 billion. We throw 30% of it away. And so it's not about quantity, it's about quality. And when you do look over the years at the nutrient quality of our food, it's fallen by half to three quarters in many cases. Like, you eat a carrot now, it's not what was in a carrot when I was growing up. You eat a hamburger now, it's not what was in a hamburger when I was growing up, just in terms of the nutrient quality. So we should fix that, right? And it's not only Bitcoiners who are going to fix that. There's a lot of farmers who are starting to learn about this, but we need to educate ourselves about this, because we need to change the economic incentives that made everybody grow corn, you know, in high chemical environments. So that's one. I think education's the for me, the thing that most needs fixing, because it's for the children. And, you know, I talk about the schoolhouses of yore. It used to be a schoolhouse with like 30 kids in it and a teacher. And all the kids were in different grades. They didn't segregate the kids based off of which grade they were in. And you might all read one book together or get one lesson together, but then the teacher would go around and give individualized instruction and assignment to each kid based off of their ability, not based off of some curriculum that was handed down from the ministry or the Department of Education, which said that every kid who was born in this year must learn exactly this lesson in exactly this week from exactly this textbook. Right. And you take a look and you say, oh, gee, you know, the Industrial Revolution came up with the assembly line, which was a really efficient way to manufacture cars and other manufactured goods. And we turned our education system into this. And the inputs are human beings. Like, we're trying to manufacture human beings using industrial technology. And we claim to be a society of individuals. Well, you know, when everybody's made to be the same on the same assembly line, you're not respecting individualism. So I think that's got to be fixed. And obviously, is so fucking corrupt what college education is. It's so outrageously expensive because of student loans. The price of this thing has gone up 84% per year. Like, it's crazy, the inflation. It's crazy the reduction in quality. It's crazy the tenure of professors. It's crazy the obsolescence of the education. It's crazy that you would think that you need to that all you need to learn, it can be learned in 4 years when you're 18 to 22, and then you don't need to learn anything again for the rest of your life. Like, you need continuous education, and it should be affordable and free and precisely what you need. And we've actually already got it, right? Like, the internet delivers that. So the whole, I just think the whole thing with universities and colleges has gotten so sickening. And so, you know, it's not to say they should go away, but they should serve their proper purpose at their proper price, rather than be this marketing solution that everybody's got to go to college and university to even get a job working at a, you know, at a Hamburgers or at a Starbucks, which is completely not true and not necessary. You don't need a $200,000 four-year degree to do these things. And they should focus on real knowledge and real learning, but they may be lost causes. So that's the education. And I mean, I could go into the medicine thing and some of the other things that I talked about in that thread, but It's just like, we actually, there's a lot of work to be done. It's not just running a node, right? Like there's a lot more that we have to do, and we're going to have to pick up many of us will have to choose to get involved in some of these industries and not just repeat the errors that were there, but pay for it in Bitcoin. We got to fix the whole freaking industry. We got to change things. And many times it's good to take a couple steps back before we take some steps forward. Like there were better solutions in the past than there are in the present. And so if we just go backwards a little bit, we can pick up from where we lost the plot, where we went off the road. And I think that's true in fields like healthcare and medicine, and certainly in education, and what else? In agriculture, for sure, right? Like some of these modern technologies and modern pricings and modern marketing. I think one of the big problems we have is, I have an MBA, which is a business degree, and we overanalyzed business. We overanalyzed what we could do with marketing, or we overapplied what we could do with marketing. We look too close at the numbers. We try to maximize every single thing. There's even this mantra of maximizing shareholder value. And many people's interpretation of that is up to and including doing immoral things. I think if you're a news channel and you intentionally exaggerate the news all the time to frighten your audience, you've crossed the line. Right, you're now being dishonest, you're betraying what the purpose of your mission is, and you don't get to hide behind, I'm maximizing shareholder value, because shareholder value is maximized when everybody's scared and looking at the screen all the time. You don't get to make people sick. You don't get to create mental illness and say you're doing your job. And I don't think Bitcoiners will do that. I think Bitcoiners are awake to the fact that this is happening. We're offended by it, and we're not victims of it. And the only people who support it are the people who find themselves working in these jobs where there's, where their boss is, the quarterly results, I need 6% growth over last quarter. So that's where the whole system is broken, right? Like, well, getting 6% growth compound over and over and over when the whole economy is only growing by 2%. Mm-hmm. One is you inflate the money, you make it an illusion. The other is you start doing things that you wouldn't otherwise have done because they're immoral. And that's where we get into these problems.
Yeah, I think we're deep instead of problems.
Yeah.
I think we've lost the plot as a society. Yeah. And I do think we've crossed a lot of lines. To outline that a little bit and allude to how bad even Tomer might think things are getting before we get into some optimistic stuff. So you tweeted on June 10th, the villains are freaking out. This is fun to watch. On June 26th, I tweeted out, how much longer before World War III? Who will fight who and what will be the real reason? You replied, wasn't 2020 World War III? Wasn't it the few free rational people of the world versus the forces of collectivism, cronyism, and power worship? Didn't it look like it was all over for freedom worldwide? Didn't Bitcoiners resist the forces of evil? Isn't the tide turning in their favor? I would still say those are all open-ended questions, and I don't think those are settled. And then on July 11th, you tweeted, Tomer Strohle tweeted, Slayer of Lies tweeted, historians will say the American Empire fell in 1971 when a new dark age began to set upon man, where man worshipped government decrees, true scientific inquiry wound down, and government education replaced true learning. I hope they will say a new age began in 2009, the age of Bitcoin. And I think now would be a great time to turn to your article, Why Everything That Should Hurt Bitcoin Only Makes It Stronger.
Cool. All right. Those were some good tweets. All right. Why Everything That Should Hurt Bitcoin Only Makes It Stronger. I wrote this one on March 29th. Bitcoin loves being attacked. Bitcoin especially likes it when something tries to kill it. And it's also very fond of people trying to ban it or trying to replace it with something, open quote, better, close quote. When it comes to attacks on Bitcoin, the question isn't what's going to kill Bitcoin. It's what's going to make Bitcoin bigger, stronger, better, and more valuable. Bitcoin thrives when it's attacked. Bitcoin was born with many capabilities that protect it against the kinds of attacks that would instantly damage or destroy any person, company, or country. Yes, Bitcoin can survive a nuclear attack. Bitcoin can also develop new defenses that it previously lacked. It can add or learn new capabilities because it is software, and it strongly incentivizes people who own Bitcoins to create and install these defenses. Bitcoin is the greatest gladiator the world has ever seen. All of Bitcoin's battles take place out in the open. Each time Bitcoin successfully fends off a new attack in the real world, the whole world gets to see that Bitcoin is invulnerable to yet one more thing. As a result, observers can see that Bitcoin has proven itself to be stronger than was believed. Some of these witnesses then begin to use Bitcoin or to use it more than they had previously, and this makes Bitcoin more valuable. And when Bitcoin becomes more valuable, that usually attracts new attackers, allowing this glorious process to begin anew. Even when it comes to the very people who are attacking Bitcoin or those cheering them on, Bitcoin does not prevent them from using it when the attack is over, nor even during the attack for that matter. Bitcoin welcomes all its enemies as equally as it does its allies. Bitcoin is always ready to make peace with everyone, even with those who fought against it. Bitcoin holds no grudges against anyone and will treat its enemies exactly as it treats everyone else. Bitcoin grows from being attacked. One of the most significant ways Bitcoin grows is by proving itself capable of adapting to and surviving attacks. Many corporations and institutions are now beginning to store their wealth in Bitcoin precisely for this reason. They once expected Bitcoin to die. In fact, many of them expected it to die because they tried to kill it by preventing their customers from accessing it. They now see that this strategy only hurt themselves, not Bitcoin. So now they're coming around, and in so doing, they're making Bitcoin more valuable and more widely adopted. The same is true of people who developed and invested in competitors to Bitcoin, expecting to kill it by replacing it. They couldn't match Bitcoin's unique features, but Bitcoin could patch itself into any, Bitcoin could patch into itself any improvements they may actually have had. Now, not every attack is easily defeated. Bitcoin has been through some very frightening and drawn out battles. The most severe of these, in my opinion, was when powerful people within Bitcoin's ecosystem tried to betray it. But even in that worst case example, Bitcoin dealt a lesson to all involved, enemy and ally alike, that it could resist such an attack. As such, it has demonstrated to all those stakeholders that it is pointless to mount such an attack ever again. So attack Bitcoin, please. This article is not meant to discourage anyone from attacking Bitcoin if they have some clever attack planned. Instead, it asks that they please do attack it and give it their very best shot. It's for the good of Bitcoin.
I love that you bring it on and don't.
Come on, baby. Bitcoin only survives if it is invulnerable to every attack. So you might as well, you know, like we might as well get it over with.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's inevitable and insurmountable. But I do think I'm asking you, do you think how much worse do you think the attacks are going to get? Or are they over?
So in the sense of how bad can it look like Bitcoin's on the verge of death or dead, even dead? Well, it's looked that way before, right? It looked like its death was inevitable. It looks like it looked like all these terrible things were going to happen. And to many people, I want to say, you know, I've always had faith in Bitcoin. I've always believed that the game theory of it was going to pull us out. And sometimes it's been like, I don't know if you were around in the block size wars, but the victory in that one came suddenly and surprisingly. And while it was clear to the people who were fighting it that we had won, it wasn't clear to our enemies that they had played a losing hand and that they had even lost at the moment that they had lost. So that was kind of an interesting history. And I there's a couple of great things to read. The Block Size Wars, I think, is a book. And I have an article called Don't Tell Me There Are No Heroes in Bitcoin that details this and talks about the war that was fought. So we may or may not get into it here. But listen, I don't know exactly, because it's unpredictable, what kind of wars Bitcoin will fight. And the amazing thing is, you know, like someone could mount an attack on Bitcoin that shuts it down for a day or a week or a month, right? Bitcoin hasn't been down at all since the last time was a very short episode back in early 2013. In fact, before I ever became involved in Bitcoin. So it's been running flawlessly with no downtime for much longer than anything else in the world. I point out, like, even Google this year so far alone has had 4 or 5 downtime events, and they have billions of dollars. Bitcoin has no dollars, right? It has Bitcoin has no employees. Google has thousands, tens of thousands of employees.
Definitely has no dollars.
Right. but Bitcoin doesn't even have Bitcoin, right? Like Bitcoin isn't spending Bitcoins to hire people to make it work better.
Right.
It just has the incentives that people, you know, the incentives for people to preserve and protect and keep the thing running in a decentralized fashion, which is what's so incredible, right? Bitcoin never raised a penny of venture capital. And I think this is where some of these VCs are kind of, they have a chip on their shoulder. Like, they didn't get to invest in the Series A or the angel round of Bitcoin, because Bitcoin didn't have an angel round and it didn't have a Series A and it's never going to go public. It was born. Satoshi delivered it to the world and there it was, and it doesn't need VCs and it doesn't need marketing departments and it doesn't need employees. It's really quite an extraordinary thing. And maybe I'm losing my train of thought here, just in my appreciation of how incredible Bitcoin is. So I'm saying it might suffer an attack at some point that actually does take it down for a few hours, a few days, maybe a week, maybe several weeks. But it'll pick back up and it'll start back up, and it'll, you know, and it's like, it has this thing, you know, there's all these websites, like, how many times have people declared Bitcoin dead? And yet if they were right, then it's been resurrected that many times. And if they were wrong, then the reports of their demise have been greatly exaggerated, to quote Mark Twain. So it's really this remarkable thing that you just can't stop. And I've got another article in that Why Bitcoin series called Why Nobody Can Stop Bitcoin, which actually talks about what the mechanics are that prevent Bitcoin from being stopped. But it's the decentralization of the nodes. It's the difficulty adjustment in the mining algorithm. All of these things just make it so that you can't stop this thing, and its unstoppability is why it defeats all of these attacks, which is great. And all these people, you know, you run into like 9 or 10 very common objections. The one that I find the hardest to argue with, not because the logic isn't there, but the people who hold it have this. I'll get into it. It's the people who say the government will stop it. Well, you know, the government will just stop it. And say, well, why do you think the government can stop it? Well, they'll order it stop. I say, well, they can't order it stop because there's no, it exists outside their jurisdiction. They go, oh, they'll really want to stop that. And sometimes I ask people, I say, okay, what has the government ever stopped? Like, they haven't even stopped the things that they said that they started. So things that were completely in their control, like the income tax. They said, oh, we're just going to temporarily institute a 1% income tax, and the thing has run out of control, and, you know, pretty soon it's going to be like 130% of your income with negative interest rates. You know, you have to pay for income tax. They couldn't stop drugs. They couldn't stop weapons. They couldn't stop alcohol. They couldn't stop poverty. They couldn't stop anything that they declared war on. Sadly, even actual wars we're struggling to win right now, despite having a really powerful military. But the government can't stop anything. The government can make things illegal. And sorry, there's a fly there. The government can make things illegal, but that doesn't mean they stop. That just means they become illegal. They go underground. They become a dark market. But the people who believe the government can stop a thing are, it's amazing the conviction that they have, despite never in their life having seen the government stop anything. I find that really interesting. I don't quite understand the psychological phenomenon. It's like you haven't inspected close enough, and the fact that I make these arguments to some of these people, I say, well, like, what? Show me something the government has stopped, and they can't come up with a single example. Yet they still believe that the government can stop something designed to not be stopped. It's like, I don't know how to reason with that person. And I hope that they go away and, you know, something comes to them and that gradually there's a new idea that's taken seed in their mind and will eventually develop into, you know what? Maybe the government isn't almighty, isn't omniscient and omnipowerful. And what's the word I'm looking for? Omnipotent. That's the word. The government isn't omnipotent. Maybe they're impotent.
Yeah. Maybe those people just want to root against you and Bitcoin and.
No, I think they actually believe, they carry a belief that these are the same people who vote for the politician who promises this time to give everybody a job, right? Oh, I voted for the last guy. Did you notice that the last guy didn't get everybody a job? And the guy before, and the guy before, and the guy before, and like, you can take it to the history that goes before you were born. They're all making the same promises over and over again, and none of them are ever delivering on these promises. But they believe it. They want to believe it. They believe that government has a potency that it doesn't. They believe that we can, by passing laws, change reality. And I actually think I do know what the fundamental philosophical problem is they don't know what's given in reality versus what's man-made, what's choosable, right? You can't just make wealth for everybody by passing a law or pointing a gun at somebody. You have to work to make wealth, right? You have to, someone has to discover ways to create it, and then people have to do the work. And this is again, it's another one of these things that Bitcoin fixes. It encourages more energy to be created and produced. It can only be produced in exchange for real work. It can't be conjured up by crafty politicians or stupid politicians who themselves believe that they can fix everything, even though they're incapable of fixing anything. And that's kind of what lies at the root. So it'd be wonderful if people understood philosophy. And like, this isn't really deep philosophy. It's like, there are things you cannot change, though, you know, the laws of physics. And there are things you can change, like whether you're going to wear a black shirt or a red shirt today, or whether you're going to work hard today or not work hard today, whether you're really going to pursue the truth or whether you're going to be intellectually lazy and let lies permeate your brain. Right? These are important, more important than what color shirt you wear. But you can't change the law of gravity, and you can't change the fact that the state of nature doesn't include wealth. Right? Castles don't exist, homes don't exist, air conditioners don't exist, electrical generating plants don't exist in nature. We have to discover how to make them, and then we have to put in the work to creating them, and then we have to maintain them. And this is kind of one of the big flaws that the politicians today, the postmodern politicians make. It's like, don't worry, I'm going to fix the environment. I don't need to produce energy. I'm opposed to carbon. And without actually thinking of the consequences. And so you end up with brownouts. You end up with a lack of electricity in states that have more than adequate capacity to generate electricity for everybody. But politicians have outsmarted themselves here. Anyhow, yeah. Where were we?
Yeah, I think the state's going to come with everything they have in the bag, in the toolbox. I think one thing they might get away with is maybe neutering Bitcoin through making it an institutionalized store of value, really focusing on unit price bias, pricing, you know, less well-to-do people out of it, making it very KYC. What I want to read, though, is your, I think, pinned tweet. In hindsight, it was inevitable, a thread. Because while I just that note that as months. A devil advocate, that's not really what I'm focused on. And I want to focus on Bitcoin's unstoppability. So in hindsight, it was inevitable, a thread. You wrote this on January 30th. When they put all the gold in Fort Knox, the gold standard failed. In hindsight, it was inevitable. When they allowed governments to conjure money out of thin air, governments conjured it without accountability. In hindsight, it was inevitable. When they unaccountably printed trillions of dollars, those close to the money spigot got wildly rich, while those who worked hard for a living remained poor. In hindsight, it was inevitable. When they bailed out the rich and made the poor struggle, everyone who sought justice began to look for a new kind of money. In hindsight, it was inevitable. When people looking for a new kind of money turned to math and computers, they created a system out of the reach of corrupt officials. In hindsight, it was inevitable. When people became aware of the corruption of fiat and the integrity of Bitcoin, they began to accumulate Bitcoin. In hindsight, it was inevitable. When profitable corporations realized they could only protect their money by buying Bitcoin, they made it their balance sheet reserve asset. In hindsight, it was inevitable. When everyone had switched to Bitcoin, it became the world reserve asset. In hindsight, it was inevitable. When mankind explored the solar system, they took Bitcoin with them. In hindsight, it was inevitable. And I will add, in hindsight, it was always a bull market. I love this one too. It's poetry, it's poetic. Yeah. You know, I do think it rallies the troops, which I think is important I'd love for you to read why Bitcoin is the most important thing happening in the world.
All right.
Before we wrap it up and then roll out.
Okay. Why Bitcoin is the most important thing happening in the world. I wrote this on April 11th. I published it on April 11th. The magical miracle of money. Money is a tool unique to humans. It coordinates human activities and allows for voluntary cooperation between people on a scale so grand as to dwarf anything that we could accomplish without it. Take a minute to consider any product you recently bought. Think about how many people had to work to get the materials for it, manufacture it, package it, warehouse it, stock it, and ship it. Yet you didn't have to talk to a single one of them. You just had to get some money to one business without having to think about any of this, let alone having to try to organize it. The sophistication of coordinating human activity that money allows for is far beyond what anyone can plan. It seems miraculous or magical when contemplated in this regard. Money creates civilization. Given access to it, humans will use sound money to create a civilization in which an overwhelming majority of them can apply their talents and time to obtain their essential needs and other values that will delight and inspire them. As they develop and their inspiration drives them towards greater accomplishments, money allows civilization itself to adapt by re-coordinating human action. But there is a destroyer, dark magic money. Unfortunately, there are people who tamper with money and its magnificent coordination process. Thieves try to obtain money by taking it by force. Fraudsters obtain it by promising something in exchange for it and not delivering on the promise. There are lawmakers who think they can better coordinate human action by decreeing restrictions on economic interactions. And then there are the central banks who monopolize and control money itself so that its magical benefits are distorted, destroyed, or even reversed. We and our money have been under their control since 1971 with startling consequences. For most people reading this, that means you've lived darkness your whole life. Take a minute to think of the biggest goal of those who have taken over money. They claim that it is desirable that money lose its purchasing power over time. If money isn't losing enough purchasing power quickly enough for them, they intentionally take action to destroy its purchasing power faster. They claim this will get people to consume more quickly and that this will be good for the economy. They use their control over money to drive unnecessary, unwanted consumption in the short term by destroying people's ability to save for the long term. The father of their movement, John Maynard Keynes, justified this by saying, quote, "In the long term, we are all dead," close quote. In the long term, though, we can and should thrive. We are not all dead in the long term. For one, we each live longer, healthier, and happier lives when we focus on the long term and are permitted to plan for it. Eating well and in moderation, exercising, developing preventions and cures for disease all extend our individual lives. And saving for the future lets us live without anxiety over how we will care for ourselves later in life. Moderating short-term consumption preserves scarce resources and the entire environment for the future of all people who will ever live. Long-term focus allows us to embark on multi-generational projects. These were common in the ages before central banks took over money. Now the world has been stripped of them. Magic internet money can rescue humankind and the earth. Good money that allows humanity to coordinate its activities peacefully for the long term is desperately needed. It is good for individuals. It is good for humanity as a whole. It is good for the environment. Bitcoin is this money. It is not controlled by anyone, and it is designed to last for the ages. Bitcoin is the invention we need to recover from the self-destructive, greedy, inhuman trends casting darkness over our civilization.
So, Mayor, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this conversation. I only have a couple more questions for you. One is Tomer a pseudonym or is that your real name?
It's an Israeli name. I was born in Israel. We moved to Canada when I was just five and a half years old. So it's apparently a reasonably common name over there, but I haven't run into too many Tomers while I've been here.
Do you know what the meaning behind is? My kids have Israeli or Hebrew names. I have an affinity for them, but what does Tomer mean?
It means date, the fruit, you know, that sweet fruit that they sell next to the figs and the dried apricots. So it's the fruit of the palm tree. So it's sweet. I'm sweet with a bit of a crusty skin and a pit on the inside.
I love it. And my final question for you, and you posed the question yourself in a tweet. The question isn't, is Bitcoin alien technology? But why do so many look at it and think it might be alien technology? It is such an exceptional and unprecedented invention. And, you know, I only think of two or three different scenarios for Satoshi. He's an alien, time travel, and he's dead. He or she. And just because it seems so otherworldly to me, the ability to launch this thing, to have the foresight to start out as anonymous, to stay anonymous, to remove yourself from the situation, to never be outed, doxed, that we know of or are aware of, just makes it seem unhuman to me. What do you think?
I have one article that I wrote, why people think Bitcoin is alien technology. And I read it on another podcast. I think the podcast called The Dumbest Guy in the Room. And so I actually painted out all the reasons why Bitcoin is not like any other invention that human beings have ever created before. And it's just like four really major ones. And then a couple of speculative ones as well. So I encourage people to go find that article on my Medium, and you can. There's a link to the audio if you want to listen to the audio in there, or you can just read it. I don't know what to think. There are times when I think Satoshi was just a very wise man, very principled, very experienced. Like definitely not a young man, because there was just so much wisdom and experience required to put together what Bitcoin was. There are times when I feel, yeah, this thing came from another dimension, right? Like it's something from the ages for the ages. There are times when I have a kind of a religious experience to it. It's a spirit. I have another article that I wrote called Painting a Portrait of Bitcoin. And I try to paint an image of what Bitcoin would look like if you could see it, if you could actually look at it with your eyes or touch it with your hands. And when I think about it in that regard, it's like this, I describe it as this, by the time I built this whole picture of it, it's like this being of pure truth. Every transaction in it is a provably true statement. Every block is a proven, you know, has the proof of work. So it's everything's provably true within this thing that is marching forward one step, one block every 10 minutes to being surrounded by people admiring its truth and being able to interact with it. And so it gives me a very spiritual feeling. It's very hard to know, right? That's part of this the beauty and the mystery of this thing that is so exceptional, so extraordinary. I've written in a number of different places, it is undoubtedly the greatest invention of the 21st century, even though we're only 21 years into
the 500 years century. Or 1,000 years, but yeah.
Like it's so unbelievably exciting and phenomenal for the people who really study it. And then, as you said, there are people who are terrified by it because I can't imagine that somebody built something. It crosses, you know, here before I said, that, you know, you need to know the difference between what exists as a law of nature and what is man-made. And Bitcoin is like fusing these two things together. It's this man-made thing that's suddenly like a law of nature. It's like, how, you know, it's so extraordinary and so many.
Like the wheel of fire.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's become a part of humanity, but it's just at the early days. And so maybe that's what's so exciting to live, to be a part, to be alive at a time when something so fundamentally positive and civilization changing is just showing up. It hasn't integrated at all, right? Like 99% of people don't know what it has to offer and 99.9% don't understand how it works. And yet here it is, and it's so big, and it's so serious, and so unstoppable. It really is. It's just breathtaking. It's awe-inspiring. That's all I can say. So I don't know, right? Nobody really knows. Maybe someday we'll know, but we'll probably will never know. which is
yeah, so Michael Saylor says it's like a fire in cyberspace.
Yeah,
I like what Robert Breedlove talks about Bitcoin, the number zero, mm-hmm. and I think a lot about when the number zero was discovered or recognized or heard of. And then the people who were like, the number zero doesn't exist. You can't sell me zero right. apples. You're a fool.
Right.
And you're trying to convince them that zero and negative numbers exist. It's a mathematical concept. People say, oh, why do you believe in Bitcoin so much? And it's like, well, because it's not a belief. It's just math. I'm just going with these first principles. Mm-hmm. But then it lends itself to so many other first principles or things like that we talk about that aren't math based, but love and honesty mm-hmm. and integrity and trust and conviction and confidence. Right. I always questioned a lot about the world. I always felt maybe the world was a little off, but like it was hard to gain conviction before Bitcoin because you couldn't put your thumb on it.
Yeah.
Or at least from my perspective, but.
Well, there's so many confusing things about it. Like I remember in some of the debates that I had, people said, well, it can't be real because it's just an idea. Mm-hmm. I said, well, no, like are germs just an idea? And they said, well, no, germs exist. I can see them under a microscope. I said, but you can't see them. You can't see them without a microscope, right? I said, well, Bitcoin exists. Like it's a very small, it's a huge structure. It's like, it's a terabyte now, or it's 500 gigabytes. And it's a very, very precise physical structure. Every time the blockchain, every place that the blockchain exists, it's perfectly precise physical structure stored on physical media. Like it has to be stored on physical media. If all the physical media in the world went away, we wouldn't have the blockchain. It is a physical thing, but it's so microscopic that you can't see it. And so you have taken it for granted that it's not real because you think it's an idea, but it's a physical structure. That blockchain is a physical structure. It is physically written onto your USB key or your solid state drive, or like it exists physically, right? When I run a node on this laptop that I'm talking to you on, when I shut it off, the node stops to sync, but it's still physically stored there on that solid state drive. And when I relaunch Bitcoin Core, it resyncs, the physical structure matches the physical structure that exists on all the other solid state drives everywhere in the world. So Bitcoin is a physical thing. Now here's where it kind of gets, so it's not a physical thing that's in one place. It's a physical thing that's cloned perfectly, flawlessly, immutably in tens of thousands of places. And you can't tell one from the other. There are these perfect, that's one of the things I wrote about in the Alien article. There's perfect clones everywhere, reaching out to each other and making sure that they're perfect clones of one each other. And they have a rule by which they know which one is the perfect one. Mm-hmm. And so that they all imitate the perfection of all the others. And so it exists physically, but not in any one place. And its existence in any place is sufficient for it to exist. So it's all like, okay, now it's nothing else I've ever seen before in the world. And wait, I'm only just getting started with what Bitcoin is. But like, there's all these objections that the people who don't want to believe in Bitcoin will have. And one of them is it's not, well, you can't touch it. And it's like, well, the only reason you can't, in the same way that you can't touch a virus because it's too small, but you know it exists, right? And very much in the same way you can't touch a virus, like the thing's replicating all over the world. Don't tell me it doesn't exist, and I can show you exactly where it exists, and I have a tool to inspect it, right? Which is a blockchain explorer or a full node or any one of these things. Like I can see it's there, and I can tell you exactly what's there with more precision, with perfect precision of exactly what it is. There's no other question about what it is, right? It's not like, well, our microscopes are only so big. It's like, I know the exact detail of the data of the blockchain. I perfectly know it, which is another thing we don't know about anything else, which I didn't even mention in my alien technology article.
Yeah, it makes me think about Bitcoin is anti-fragile through perfect replication, which you've written about, which is sort of ironic or very different than any life form we've seen, which usually achieves anti-fragility through irregular replication and iteration. I think a lot about it in the real world through mining and its connection to the real world with the machines that it takes to mine Bitcoin, proof of work, what we talked about. And what that makes me think about my show with Knuts von Holm, where we talked about how Bitcoin connects the real world to the physical world.
Yeah.
So, it's sort of bends or twists it where we think of cyberspace as this artificial or non-real world.
It's a record keeper. Yeah. One of the things I'd like to say, I mean, there's a lot of ways I like to characterize Bitcoin when I say it's like a living thing, but it's it's humanity's companion in its journey across civilization as its scribe or as its accountant, right? It keeps track in a perfect record that's immalleable of what transactions took place and how much energy was consumed to record these transactions. And how much energy was consumed in the real world to record these transactions. And these transactions took place between entities in the real world. You and me, I sent you Bitcoin, you sent me Bitcoin. So it is the scribe that's accompanying our whole civilization with one record of all the transactions that need to be known on there for all these other things to function, which is remarkable. And so we can look at it as a tool, but we can also look at it as a companion.
Yeah, Bitcoin holds a pen and keeps a record in time, as most deaf would say. And I agree, Bitcoin is the most important thing happening in the world. And I can't tell you how much I enjoy your work, and I've enjoyed this conversation. I hope we can do it again sometime soon.
I'd be happy to.
Please let everyone know where they could find you and right. your dope work, because you are pumping it out at a prolific rate. It is great to see. I love that you're just pouring the last 9 years and all of your lifespan into this. You're obviously inspired and touched by what it could do. And I really do think that your writing is effective, articulate, and speaks to me at a very deep level. And you've mastered brevity. It's poetry. which makes it not so brief in impact and its depth, but right. there is really an art to writing short pieces that reach you.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to connect. Sometimes I look at it like with the first piece that we read, The Rich or Poor. This is going to sound maybe not humble, but I wrote it, and the first time I read it, I was like, "Wow, I really want to meet the person who wrote that article and shake his hand." Because it was a really good article, and I aspire to write the way I managed to write. So I was quite proud of myself, I guess. But it still doesn't feel like I wrote it because it kind of came from my subconscious. But you're saying, where can people find my writing? So Tomer Strohlight, TOMERSTROLIGHT. .medium.com. I publish almost all my work there, and if it's not published there, I usually publish an article pointing to it on there, because that's where most of my stuff is. Of course, I don't publish all my tweets on there, and I'm constantly tweeting. Sometimes I'm a little embarrassed about what I tweet, but usually it feels right at the right time. So I'm just at Tomer Strohlight on Twitter, so follow me on Twitter. And I'll also often announce, or almost always announce, my new appearances on podcasts or my new articles on there. I like to hang out in Twitter spaces lately. I've discovered that's kind of fun. I was doing Clubhouse more before, but I'm just more on Twitter. So it's easy to fall into the spaces over there. That's mostly where you'll find me. If you're in the Toronto area, reach out to me and DM me. There's Toronto meetups that happen every other week. I love to meet other Bitcoiners, and we try to throw these every other week. And maybe next year I'll make it out to Miami or some other show, depending on the circumstances, and hopefully meet you guys at some of these other great Bitcoin conferences and meetups elsewhere.
Yeah, that'd be so dope. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your writing. I really do think I get what it's like to just pour your heart and soul into something so quickly, so abruptly and emphatically, and just reaching into the well, and it just all comes out. So I'm super excited for everything that you're putting out there. And it's really, you're just hitting home run after home run. So it's just awesome.
Thank you so much. I love the fact that people are connecting to the writing. Like I write because I want to share my love and passion for Bitcoin with other people and hear ideas and criticisms as well, because I'm pursuing the truth as much as anybody else is. So it's all part of this. There's one other article that I called How Bitcoin's Like a Giant Cybernetic Metabrain, that in which I theorize that we're all part of a brain. We're all neurons inside this brain of Bitcoin. And it's a challenging article. And maybe someday, if you want, we can discuss it.
Yeah, save that one for me. I really like the way that sounds. And I want that one.
That's a really cool one. It's a tough one. So that one would be like, that's the only one we're doing the whole episode.
I hear you.
All these challenges.
And you do have some like that. You do have some where you go a little bit longer in length, right. And get a little deeper, just in terms of using more words to explain a point, and hash something out. And so
maybe someday I'll be able to write that one shorter, but that one's like a 20 plus minute read. And if we were to discuss it, we would break it up into chunks and go through the various pieces, and maybe I'd be able to make the case.
Let's do it.
But right now, as we talk, Bitcoin is thinking.
Yeah, I agree. It's learning about us just as much as we're learning about it. I do suspect that. So I'd love to get into that one.
Cool. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on. Yeah.
Thanks, bro.
Tomer Strohlite, the slayer of lies on how rich or poor Bitcoiners have what money can't buy. This episode was brought to you by Ledin, Bitcoin Magazine, and the Bitcoin 2022 Conference. Ledin.io is a secure, simple, and easy-to-use platform for managing and growing your digital wealth. If you want to see what it's all about and get $50 free in USDC when you take out your first Ledin loan, head over to start.ledin.io/Bitcoin Matrix. Last year, around 13,000 Bitcoiners came to celebrate Bitcoin at Bitcoin 2021. They are expecting 35,000 this year for Bitcoin 2022. And this year's event will be held at the Miami Beach Convention Center that can hold up to 100,000 people. It's going to be off the hook, and I can't wait to see you there and grab that beer. For 10% off, use my code CEDRIC2022 and check the show notes for the link and more details. And thank you for listening. If you dig the chats, please make sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends and family. That's the best way to support the show and make sure you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. So many fresh and dope guests are already lined up for the fall that you won't want to miss, like Mark Moss, Alex Gladstein, and Mayor Conger. Stack sats and stay focused. This is Cedric. Peace.